With the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Taylor Hillman.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. Today is January 16th. Thanks for joining Farm City Newsday. On the calendar this week, pistachio growers will gather in the Central Valley. University of California is having their statewide pistachio day at the Visalia Convention Center tomorrow. The all-day meeting has sessions that cover all aspects of pistachio production and ongoing research. AgNet West is assuming there will be a lot of talk around chilling hours this year. It's been a relatively warm winter, and the chilling hour requirements for trees have probably not been met, although we have had the return of fog recently, which has shown to help some as well. Brian German and myself will be at the meeting, so stay with AgNet West for all the information. Let's get to the news. Growers in the Central Valley heard about a promising new raisin variety last week. UC Extension Specialist Matthew Fidelibus has been researching the new raisin variety called Sunpreme. He said there's still, of course, a lot to learn about the variety, but two characteristics are extremely intriguing as they would ease labor issues.
Yeah, what's really interesting about Sunpreme is that it has, there's two main things. One is that it has fruitful basal nodes, and what that means is that it can be pruned to spurs, and spurs are really short structures that you could prune that by machine. You don't have to prune it by hand like we do with cane prune vines like we currently do for raisin grapes. And the other key trait is that it dries naturally after ripening, so the fruit just ripen and then they start drying, so there's no cutting needed, there's no harvest needed to initiate the drying process. It just happens naturally.
We'll hear the entire Fidelibus interview later on in the show. Now here's Brian German.
At the recent San Joaquin Valley Grape Symposium, one of the discussions focused on methods for managing powdery mildew and botrytis. International expert and emeritus plant pathologist at UC Davis, Doug Gubler, has been looking at the agricultural application of Scan-It technologies.
The machine has been used in cities to detect allergens. It's really a neat program, and being able to predict when sporulation occurs in the spring for powdery mildew is a huge issue. And by having these machines out there, we would know almost immediately when those spores were available.
The new technology will provide detailed data every 15 minutes to allow farmers to see exactly how many spores are in the field. Gubler noted what kind of benefits this information can provide for growers.
It's going to be available for growers to make decisions based on whether or not they've got infectable spores there. And hopefully down the road it'll cut out some fungicide sprays, so it'll make it cheaper.
A series of farm-to-wick regional training sessions are being offered throughout the state to help increase sales of fresh fruits and vegetables to local families. The California WIC Association's Farm-to-Wick campaign is aimed at promoting the consumption of locally grown nutritious produce available at farmers' markets throughout California. The two-hour training sessions will provide the information, tools, and authorization necessary to accept and process the monthly fruit and vegetable checks or cash value voucher benefits issued through the Women, Infants, and Children Supplemental Nutrition Program, known as WIC. The first session was recently held in San Diego, with 8 more scheduled between January 22nd and April 2nd. The training is being provided by the California State WIC Program of the California Department of Public Health in collaboration with the California WIC Association. The list of remaining training sessions is available through the California WIC Association website. Registration is available online or by calling the California WIC Association. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
In national news, funding to keep the government open runs out this Friday, and agriculture and other industries face what they don't like most: uncertainty. The only thing certain about Washington is there's always uncertainty. American Farm Bureau budget advisor R.J. Carney.
Uncertainty is never good for any business, but within agriculture, where farmers and ranchers, they're business owners, they're making decisions on a day-to-day basis, and what happens in Washington has a direct impact on their daily decisions.
New programs are delayed and some existing programs not expanded, making producer decisions much harder. And Carney says the clock is ticking for Congress and the president to resolve immigration and other issues and get votes to keep the government open.
When they come back and start back on Tuesday, they're only going to have four working days before the current continuing resolution expires on the 19th of January. And when you continuously kick the can down the road and pass continuing resolutions, it's problematic in that it doesn't allow Department of Agriculture and other federal agencies from being able to utilize money for new programs that could be beneficial to farmers and ranchers for rural communities.
House and Senate ag spending bills, which hinge on the budget deal, do things including protect the Farm Service Agency and USDA Farm Loans programs, keep open national ag laboratories like the one in Peoria, Illinois, slated for closure, and make new investments in the organic industry. But further budget delays could also slow action on a disaster assistance package that won House but not Senate approval and has fixes for cotton and dairy programs that are key for doing a new farm bill. One of the biggest sticking points in the North American Free Trade Agreement has to do with the auto industry. There's a little more optimism about progress after Canada joined Mexico in indicating there may be room for negotiations in the auto sector. The development comes just one day after markets dipped on Canada's fear the odds are rising on President Trump following through on his threat to walk away from the deal. It also suggests that officials are looking for progress during the next round of discussions in Montreal as a way to keep negotiations moving. Two unidentified Canadian government officials told Bloomberg News that their country is preparing new proposals related to automobiles at the Montreal negotiations. Mexico has also signaled that there may be room for a breakthrough in discussions on the automobile industry. Canada's foreign minister, Chrystia Freeland, says they'll bring some new ideas on some of the more contentious U.S. proposals, but she didn't identify them. The two unidentified officials that spoke with Bloomberg says she's referring to the auto sector. Freeland also says the three countries are close to agreements on several of the bread and butter issues in the NAFTA discussions. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up.
This is California Farm Bureau Federation President Jamie Johansson, and you're listening to AgNet West Radio Network.
This is Roger Everett, President Tulare County Farm Bureau, and you're listening to AgNet West Radio.
Welcome back to AgNet West's Farm City Newsday. More agriculture news for you now. USDA's deputy secretary reminds young people that there are many career opportunities in agri-sciences. Stephanie Ho has more.
The category of agricultural sciences is broad and encompasses many different fields.
Ranging from, you know, plant science to animal science to microbiology, molecular biology, food science, you name it.
That was Deputy Ag Secretary Stephen Senske, who is encouraging young people to take a look at the ag sector.
We're in a transformative age here in agriculture, and I think that they can have bright and promising careers that will be extremely fulfilling.
One example he points to is the emerging field of soil health.
We're just really beginning to understand, really on the cutting edge of what's happening in that whole soil biome.
He adds there even are developments in understanding basic processes like photosynthesis.
We're able to increase photosynthesis rates by 20, 30, 40% for crops, and think about what a profound difference that will have in feeding a growing world. So it really is an exciting time.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Well, in today's livestock news, USDA released their January World Agricultural Supply and Demand Report last Friday, and in the livestock, poultry, and dairy section, they say the estimate for 2017 total red meat and poultry has been reduced. The production numbers have been reduced. Based on preliminary data, they say beef and turkey production estimates were lowered, more than offsetting the higher pork and broiler production. The egg production estimate was raised, though, modestly on late 2017 production data. But now for this year, 2018, the total red meat and poultry production forecast was raised. That's due to higher expected pork, beef, and broiler production that will well offset lower turkey production. The 2018 beef production forecast was raised due to higher cattle placements in late 2017. Those are expected to result in higher fed cattle marketings and slaughter here in the first half of this year. Average carcass weights are also expected to be heavier. USDA will, of course, be releasing its semi-annual cattle report on January 31st. That will provide estimates of heifers' health for breeding and an insight into the number of feeder cattle available for placement during the year. The pork production forecast for this year was also raised. USDA's quarterly hogs and pigs report estimate that the September-November pig crop was 3% above 2016 did support a higher first-half production forecast. The report also indicated producers expect to expand farrowings about 3% in the first half of the year, which, coupled with continued gains in pigs per litter, supports higher second-half production. Now, the forecast broiler production was raised for 2018 due to favorable returns, while turkey production was reduced based on continued weak demand. The egg production forecast was also slightly raised. Now, when it comes to the dairy section, for 2018, milk production estimate was reduced due to slower anticipated growth in the dairy cow herd combined with continued slow growth in milk per cow. For 2018, the fat basis import forecast was also reduced on slowing demand for butter products, while the export forecast was raised on expected robust foreign demand for U.S. fat-containing products. But for 2018 overall, dairy product prices were reduced on slowing domestic demand and global competition. The Class 3 and Class 4 price forecasts for 2018 were reduced on lower product prices. The all milk price was lowered to $15.80 to $16.60 for this year. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture late last week did finalize a regulation that will allow all Mexican states to export pork to the United States, a move that's actually supported by the National Pork Producers Council. USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, is implementing a science-based risk assessment that determined Mexico is free of classified swine fever that is highly contagious and viral disease in pigs. It was eradicated from the U.S. in the late 70s. APHIS in 2016 concluded the risk of CSF from pork imports from Mexico is negligible. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
Officially, it's known as the H-2A program. It's the law that farmers use to bring migrant workers into the U.S. to help produce our crops. In reality, farmers don't like the H-2A program, but it's all they have to bring the help in that is vital to our fruit and vegetable crops and seriously important to dairy and livestock operation. A newer, more effective program was supposed to be in effect for the 2018 crop, but it isn't. Now, while some members of Congress are pushing hard to complete the new program, others continue to blunder along and drag their feet. It may be finished in time to help farmers with their next year's crop, but it's not a sure thing. Meanwhile, farmers patiently wait and hope. But it's a long time, and nobody knows. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, Agnet West.
This is Farm City News Day by Agnet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from around the state and the nation at our website, agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Farm City News Day by Agnet West. I'm Taylor Hillman. In today's interview segment, we head back to my interview with UC Extension Specialist Matthew Fidelibus. He recently presented about his research on a new raisin variety called Sunpreme at the San Joaquin Valley Grape Symposium in Easton. The new variety is showing promise in helping lessen labor concerns.
Matthew Fidelibus, Extension Specialist with the Department of Viticulture and Enology at Davis.
You talked today at the San Joaquin Valley Grape Symposium about Sunpreme. This is a new raisin variety. Let's start off with the benefits of it. There's two main things that will make it easier for labor concerns. So talk about the benefits of Sunpreme.
Yeah, what's really interesting about Sunpreme is that it has, there's two main things. One is that it has fruitful basal nodes. And what that means is that it can be pruned to spurs, and spurs are really short structures that you could prune that by machine. You don't have to prune it by hand like we do with cane prune vines, like we currently do for raisin grapes. And the other key trait is that it dries naturally after ripening, so the fruit just ripen and then they start drying. So there's no cutting needed, there's no harvest needed to initiate the drying process. It just happens naturally.
So the idea is both of those labor-intensive practices could be mechanized.
Right, both pruning and so the vines could be pruned by a machine, and then their dried raisins could be harvested by a machine. So really a huge reduction in labor as compared to the current practice, which requires hand pruning and hand harvest or cane cutting to initiate the drying.
And you're still trying to learn a lot more about this variety, and that leads to some of the issues. You talked about just little knowledge as far as stalks and trellises. Talk about that a little bit. And then also overcropping was something else you touched on.
Yeah, I mean, this variety and the traits that it has are so new that there's a lot that we need to learn about it. And, we don't even really understand exactly why it dries, so that's one of the things we're trying to take a look at. And we think that the factors that contribute to the natural drying are also related to some extent with the shatter, which is kind of a problem. Although we learned that the shatter is not it's not that big of a problem. We can measure it. We see that it's around 10% or so of the fruit actually falls off the vine before it's harvested. And then maybe another 10% falls off during harvest. But still, even after those losses, we achieve a pretty respectable yield, similar to the dry and vine that we have now with cane prune varieties.
You still are unsure how this works with some of the stocks or and trellis systems. Talk about your trial and what kind of trellis system you use there.
Well, the trellis systems I think that we may end up using for Sun Prime will probably be maybe more similar to wine grape trellises than to raisin trellises. Raisin trellises have really changed over the years. We transitioned from tray drying, which is the old-fashioned way, still being widely practiced, to dry and vine with cane prune varieties, which use very large trellises. And now we have something totally new, a variety that can be spur pruned or even machine pruned, and then just dries on its own without any cane cutting. And I think we can now start thinking about optimizing the trellises for machines to make sure that we can take the best advantage of the opportunities that this new variety offers in terms of being able to machine prune and machine harvest.
You talked about that fruit drop, and that was kind of as you showed the drying process in a series of pictures today. You could see kind of why that happens. Some of those arms start drying out. It is sporadic kind of on how it's drying. That's one of the things you guys are looking at. And maybe some of those fruit that start drying the earliest are the ones that are falling off as the rest are drying out, right?
Well, I think what we see is that there's this period within a few weeks of when the fruit starts to dry that they are really sensitive to falling off the cluster. And the problem is why we have an extended drop period, I think, is because the clusters, each cluster on a vine may start to dry at a different time than the others. And so they all pass through this phase where they're kind of fragile. And so since there's different clusters at different stages of drying, there's always going to be some that are at kind of this fragile stage and they're losing some arms and losing some raisins. And so it's kind of unnerving for a grower to see these pieces of the cluster just falling off quite easily onto the ground. And you can see the raisins kind of piling up on the ground. But in the end, you're still able to harvest, even by machine, quite a bit of raisins. And I think the early drop is just sort of a quirk of the variety and kind of the price that you pay. But you still, it looks like, at least based on our first season of collecting data, that you're still going to end up with a good crop and much less labor required to get there.
That was one of the interesting things in your trial was, is you did hand harvesting and had about a 10% drop, and then you did mechanized harvesting and you had less. That's interesting to see.
Yeah, it was interesting, and it wasn't really what we expected. So there's kind of like two drop periods. One happens even before you're thinking about harvesting, and this is something that happens soon after the fruit starts to dry on its own. It just kind of sheds on its own because it's very loosely attached. And when we observed how loosely attached they were, we thought, well, this is a problem because when we go and start shaking the vines basically to harvest the fruit, we were worried that fruit would start falling off even before the harvester, you know, reached the vines where fruit might be falling from. So we were really concerned about it, and so that's why we measured it. And we were surprised to see that there's really no worse and maybe even better capture of the raisins from machine than you were getting by hand.
The other interesting thing you did was, and this is something you're trying to learn with the variety as well, is it seems like in bunches it dried from the top down, but the arms dried from the bottom up, right?
Yeah, just kind of an interesting observation that we made, and we don't really know exactly what it means yet, but it seemed pretty consistent. Like you said, the arms, berries on our arms would dry with the most apical arm, or the one on the top of the cluster, would dry first and then kind of work its way down the cluster. But within an arm, it seemed like the berries dried first at the tips and then toward the base, so kind of interesting.
Last question here. Of course, you guys are looking more. You're hoping to learn more in some more years. production and quality look pretty good for this, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty happy with the yields. We're getting yields that are comparable to modern dry-on-the-vine systems that we are using right now, you know, that were the ones that we've been using over the last 10 years or so. And those yields are probably twice of a conventional tray-dried vineyard. So the yields look pretty good. And the quality, I think, is also very good. The USDA scores were good. And I brought some raisins to the meeting, and people have been trying them, and everything I've heard has been positive. So
that's what I was going to say. One last thing, you reminded me there. It does taste a little different. Good, but it does taste a little different.
Yeah, I actually really like the taste. I actually think that I might prefer the taste of it to other raisins. It has, to me, like kind of a fruity or floral sort of component to it. It's subtle. It's not a very overpowering flavor, but it's just something a little bit different. And some people say it's sweeter, but I think what they really mean is just sort of like a fruity or a kind of a floral type of a taste, and it's quite nice.
Thanks, I agree. Thanks, Matthew.
This is Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. I'm Taylor Hillman. Recapping our top national headline, funding to keep the government open runs out this Friday, and agriculture and other industries face what they don't like most, uncertainty. The only thing certain about Washington is there's always uncertainty. American Farm Bureau budget advisor R.J. Carney.
Uncertainty is never good for any business, but within agriculture where farmers and ranchers, they're business owners, they're making decisions on a day-to-day basis, and what happens in Washington has a direct impact on their daily decisions.
New programs are delayed and some existing programs not expanded, making producer decisions much harder. And Carney says the clock is ticking for Congress and the president to resolve immigration and other issues and get votes to keep the government open.
When they come back and start back on Tuesday, they're going to have four working days before the current continuing resolution expires on the 19th of January. And when you continuously kick the can down the road and pass continuing resolutions, it's problematic in that it doesn't allow Department of Agriculture and other federal agencies from being able to utilize money for new programs that could be beneficial to farmers and ranchers for rural communities.
House and Senate ag spending bills, which hinge on the budget deal, do things including protect the Farm Service Agency and USDA Farm Loans programs, keep open national ag laboratories like the one in Peoria, Illinois, slated for closure, and make new investments in the organic industry. But further budget delays could also slow action on a disaster assistance package that won House, but not Senate approval, and has fixes for cotton and dairy programs that are key for doing a new farm bill. Potato growers met in Florida recently for their annual conference. The National Potato Council was there, said they're happy to hear that a discussion on overhauling the nation's immigration system is taking place in Washington, D.C. Kara Hart has more.
Earlier this week, President Trump met with top congressional leaders. National Potato Council's Vice President of Public Policy, Cam Quarles, says Trump wants to deal with the deferred action for childhood arrivals issue. Quarles says the way Trump wants to move forward with that is also moving legislation to address border security, mandatory electronic verification for workers, and an agriculture component.
There's clearly a move in the House to introduce a bill to that effect. We've seen language in the last 24 hours on it. And also the Senate just this afternoon announced that they had a bipartisan compromise on an immigration bill. So there are pieces moving right now. The challenge always is you have to get to the right vote count. If you can't come up with 218 votes in the House and 60 votes in the Senate, you're just having nice conversations. So too often people aspire to things, but they don't count the votes very well. We're really hopeful that given the bipartisan nature of this, they might be able to get the votes together this time. It's been 20 years in coming for agriculture.
It's unknown how the Trump administration will move forward with NAFTA negotiations. Bryant Christie, Incorporated Vice President of Global Access, Matt Lance, told potato growers on Thursday he's hearing President Trump could withdraw from the trade agreement.
The renegotiation could work. There's a negotiation in 2 weeks in Montreal, but they've left the hardest issues to resolve at this point, as they would do in any trade agreement. It just seems like people are pretty dug in, and there's a little bit of a feel that there may be spoiling for a fight. And as a result, We could end up, if we can't make progress, having the president announce he wants to withdraw from NAFTA, which would be very dangerous and bad for the U.S. potato industry.
Reporting Agriculture's Business from Orlando, I'm Kara Hart.
To get more information on topics you've heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also follow AgNet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgNetWest. Follow Brian German @BrianAgNetWest and Taylor Hillman @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by AgNet West.